name is Bill Royce. I'm from West Central Minnesota, and I've farmed and been an engineer. I've been working with leadership within the region. Done a lot of other types of activities, hopefully building strength within the people, and hopefully I want really is to kind of, I guess, look at the environment a little different way. And that's where the sustainable agricultural mechanism is coming in. We've been hearing a lot of terminologies, specifically in Minnesota, and that's coming like the state of Department of Agriculture. They're coming out and they're having 17 people having demonstrations of sustainable agriculture. They're giving them up to $200,000 in a big, large sum. So things are happening in that direction. We've got another Institute of Sustainable Agriculture in Minnesota, which the Organic Growers Association are working with the University of Minnesota, trying to create a dialogue mechanism so they can cooperate and deal with it. But we're still wondering, what is a sustainable agricultural mechanism? They've got this here organization called Minnesota Food Association, which I've already brought up, which is a group of people that I guess are working throughout the state, setting up various dialogues of understanding, communication of what things are happening around. And they had up to 800 last year and just discussing sustainable agriculture. This year they had some rural urban issues trying to work together. That is happening, and again, it's coming into working together, communications, working on environmental issues, working on various issues throughout our whole mechanism. This is growing into what they call a NAFA, which is the North America Organic Grower Association, which is covering the whole world in a certain mechanism. This is coming out of this sustainable agricultural thought mechanism of understanding. We've got organizations, the Land Stewardship Project. They sponsored an organization which I belong to. That's the Western Minnesota Sustainable Ag Group, and we have 22 different farmers putting on demonstrations of sustainable ag. And we have another organization you read in the magazines, like called LISA, which is Low Input Sustainable Ag. Again, what is sustainable agriculture? This seems to be a terminology. ACRE is another mechanism that's coming out of all the chemical companies getting together, and they're sitting down trying to find ways to reduce the chemical costs. I have some real problems with this whole thing on reducing the chemical costs coming from the chemical companies. But maybe there's some legitimacy, and we have to start thinking and listening. Because maybe they are trying to clean up our water system. Maybe they are trying to clean up our whole world, I guess, system that is seems to be polluted, seems to be affected in our ozone layer. We're seeing some oceans being destroyed, our water systems, our lakes. We got acid rain problems. This is all coming in the environmental aspects. Agriculture is starting to come up with an idea called sustainable agriculture. In other words, we're trying to look at ways to reduce the inputs from the chemical aspects, from fertilizers, the herbicides, tillage mechanisms, to improve our quality of the products that we're trying to produce. We're trying to look at other ways of tilling practices to conserve the soils. We're trying to look at the mechanisms of handling our products in such a way that it won't hurt us as individuals when we're done. The soils, the bringing of the worms back to our soils, bacteria. How this is really being done, actually, is like these dialogue-type mechanisms. And our Western Minnesota group is kind of an example of what's happening, is we're bringing in speakers from all over the country, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa. We're looking at people getting from Arizona. We're trying to look at the world or United States bases, bringing in alternative ideas, ways of looking at agriculture differently. Hopefully we can get a share group. And this is this year group of 27 people we happen to have in our organization, which is growing, that we are starting to discuss and show demonstration-wise. I, for example, happen to have a demonstration on how to control quackgrass in our particular area, which is a problem for us. by the use of tillage mechanism, by the use of chemicals. Then we gotta look at the costs, we have to look at all the other aspects involved. Can we handle all the heavy tillage required to control quackgrass? That is one example. Other people are demonstrating chisel plows, they're demonstrating rotary hoes, they're actually showing comparative results, different fertilization aspects, reduced fertilization aspects, organic composting mechanisms. They're trying to look at this in a demonstrative view where your neighbors, your dialogue mechanism can start growing. And this is what this is all about. And this is the direction I'm going. I guess what I want to do from you, from my standpoint, I got to learn. I'm from a group out there in Western Minnesota. I think we've got some shared ideas within this group that we can start understanding more of what your problems are, where you can come on to help us as individual farmers in our particular area. Maybe you have some solutions for us. Possibly, I heard like yesterday, tobacco can control certain kinds of insect problems. Maybe this is stuff that we have to start cooperating with. I believe, I got September 9th, I believe I got to be in Iowa, Boone, Iowa with Dick Thompson. I don't know if you've ever heard of this gentleman. Rich Tiller is working that. But anyway, we're cooperating with South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Wisconsin. We're getting together trying to find solutions. Minimal input, possibly even completely organic mechanisms that will help all of us to have a sustainable agriculture. I'd like to hear what you guys think about in the sustainable ag thought process. Do you have any ideas of what sustainable ag is to you? Anybody has any feelings or thoughts?
I'm a little bit confused by the terminology sustainable agriculture. What does that mean to you?
To me as an individual, I like to look at sustainable as utilizing all your resources ecologically and economically and coming up with a quality product.
Does it mean sustainable over a longer period of time? Than
hopefully this is the direction we're going. We're dealing with God's land. I mean, I don't know what his intentions are with all this land. We are just, you know, people trying to work with this whole mechanism. And yes, we're going to have some problems. I'm not even arguing that. We've got some professionals out there. We've got the organic growers that have been working for years and years in very successful mechanisms. But they're having their own difficulties. We hope we can all start taking their knowledge and putting into the soils of what we're trying to do. In other words, I personally cannot economically convert to organic growing. I have 15 acres of ground that is organically stated, which is at least 3 years off of any chemicals and fertilizers. And it's looking very successful. Hopefully the grasshoppers won't eliminate it. But that's the possibility of the large land. They have a holistic view. Things do affect each other.
Or do you have grasshoppers in that area this year?
Here. We're looking, I personally in my land, we're looking at 40 per meter.
She said though, is it more on the organic land?
I don't sense, no. I don't, it isn't supposed to be. They say organic ground will not have these difficulties. I sense that there's going to be some difficulties in all of them. If you've got nutritious plants, I think we can have a less of effect. But if the grasshoppers are growing, they're going to eat everything.
What about what we saw as we went out in the fields in the early stages of the grasshoppers where we saw the weeds being eaten rather than the plants? It gave me kind of an interesting thought. I don't know what to think about that, but they seem to eat the less healthy plant first. And grasshopper thing is a new thing for me, so we haven't really dealt with that before. So it's like a
why are weeds less healthy? They're so darn.
Well, they're the ones that weren't healthy that they were eating. They were kind of the ones that were kind of looking bad in the first place. You know, you'd already kind of tilled them out, you'd already cultivated, and they were kind of half there, and then they kind of went for them first.
You had a question.
I missed your introduction. Were you, what organization were you with?
Western Minnesota Sustainable Ag Group, more or less. I had some other connections, North Dakota, so we're getting through it. Practical Farmers of Iowa, I've been connected with, and OGA, which is organic. Yes, yeah, I have been, I'm not an organic farmer, I'll be honest with you, at this point. I'm looking toward that direction. I've got my beans cost at about $8 an acre, which is compared to about 30 to 40 in normal tillage practices. My fertilizer levels are around 40 pounds of nitrogen compared to 150 in our existing area. And that's a significant cost variation that has to be considered. Economics again, and that is where we're having a lot of trouble in just keeping the people on the land. I work kind of as an advocate for our area, I guess, trying to help farmers through a distressed area, because we were losing farms significantly. And that's kind of where I got some feelings of how these people are dealing with the emotional issues. And that's really the solution, individual attitude. And that's where I'm coming from. Hopefully, through the dialogue mechanism, we can understand the attitudes of the people, why they are doing what they're doing, why can the organic farmer survive, why can not another farmer survive, or maybe he can if we give him some help. Maybe just listening, a simple process.
So, and your definition of sustainable is?
While utilizing all your resources, this is really the key issue.
But as long as
ecologically
economic.
And economically. It's got to be economic or they're not going to exist.
But what you're trying to sustain is the soil, is the land? Is this the idea? I mean, this is the word
our
sustain.
Society. Our society.
Our society. Oh, okay.
Hopefully farmers. That's really the
okay.
issue.
Oh, all right.
And that's where I'm real concerned specifically. I'm really in a narrow world, and that's why I'm asking from you people. You know, there might be some other worlds out here that I'm not even aware of at this point. And it's expanding. But there's some information there that I personally am looking for. Because I haven't got the answers. I cannot tell another farmer how to farm. That is an absolute truth. There's no way anybody can really tell another person how to farm his particular land. The consultants try. Most of them come up with generalized recommendations, generally at the university basis. They say, hey, you got to put 150 pounds of nitrogen or 200 pounds of nitrogen in order to get 200 bushel yield. I mean, that's the going rate of doing all this stuff. And that probably is true of all the information on generally overall the case. Maybe that farm has something unique. Maybe it has an organic base of about 8, where I have in my life. I have 6 to 8 organic base. Most people don't even know what that means.
What does that mean?
About 160 pounds of nitrogen right alone.
That's
in its organic
naturally.
Natural.
Uh-huh.
If it will be available to the plant. And that is what I have as a goal to work toward. Stimulation of this organic system so it starts working toward the plant. Not increase my yield goals. I guess I was thinking 150 corn. Where then I would have to possibly put in at least 100 pounds of nitrogen. I've re-looked at my whole situation. I haven't had a history of more than 70 bushel yield corn. Even when I was using, I would put down 100 pounds of nitrogen, I would still get 70, no matter what I would do. So I got realistic and looked at it. Maybe I better put my cost in a perspective of 70 bushel yield corn. That's sustainable in my judgment. Yes, I've got it there. Now I'm starting looking at some alternatives, maybe some bacteria-type material, possibly looking at seaweed, kelp, possibly looking at fish-type mulch type an individual. There's a guy in Iowa, I believe he uses 20 gallons of fish solution that he puts on his soils. This is types of mechanisms that we can possibly look at, possibly get some answers. And that's all he uses. He doesn't use anhydrous, he doesn't use the 28-0, he doesn't use the combination petrochemical fertilizer.
So you believe in some chemical fertilizers. What type of chemicals are fertilizers? Well,
you have to replace whatever you take from the soil, some way, some form. Personally, I believe that we have to rotate our cropping systems. You have to use the rye, you have to use the alfalfas, our area is prime alfalfa, beautiful land, high calcium, high phosphor type material. And so in doing as such, that is the replacing of the nutrients. Rotate your crops on a 5-year basis. I should not have corn any more than every 5 years.
What is your rotation?
It's rye, oats, wheat, corn, beans, alfalfa. I don't have them specifically in a direction because I'm not an organic farmer yet. I am rotating to that direction. I am also more experimenting than I probably am really farming legitimately according to the organic.
So you do some chemicals?
At this point, yes. I'm down to, like I mentioned before, about $8 an acre on my soybeans and possibly up to on my corn, I think I put 3 on herbicide.
You do soil testing?
Yep. An absolute necessity of any mechanism.
With the rotations, then did your soil test showing that you need less?
Very little change. Because I'm not taxing my soil anyway. I'm only taking what the soil can possibly give.
I want to ask a question pertaining to her question on economics. I heard a little something in your voice about economics. I'm just wondering, you're saying that sustainable agriculture should be ecologically sound and economically beneficial. But what is the definition of economically? Obviously, you know, there are those farmers that use high chemicals and insecticide, and they're going to get this great big yield. And, I mean, so you've got to put that in balance, you know, economic. Where does the economically sound mean? I think sustainable agriculture deals with taking care of the land and, you know, economically not starving. I'm not sure you're going to be a millionaire either.
Well, I see you're working with the economics and see you saying what you're talking about. To me, that's kind of short-term sustainable, and that's not long-term sustaining the earth. And
that's why I'm working for a pure organic basis, but I as a financial, I was just about
kind of two
broke.
Different definitions for the same word.
I was about broke about 3-4 years ago, literally. They were ready to wipe me out. Luckily, I was accidentally calling the bank that was willing to take a $25,000 loan. Simple little loan like that, and that pulled me through. That gave me one more year to work the system in such a way on an economic basis. I didn't put any more than I absolutely had to financially. It pulled me through. I had a halfway decent crop that gave me the return on investment. In other words, cost return on investment.
Farmers don't recognize it's the price. The farmer is the only person that buys retail and sells wholesale. And our nation has had a policy of cheap fuel and cheap food.
Yeah.
And our cheap fuel is going away, and we've got to have this cheap food box. And I heard a good example now. An example in our country, what is killing everybody is that they're squeezing up the small farmer. I mean, half sections of the sections. Farm land up in the 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, now that's nothing. You have to, the farmers are probably 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 acres. They're squeezing all these young, the small farms up.
I used to believe that.
And the thing here is economics. I mean, you cannot make a living up there farming a section of land.
And that's a view that I'm looking at. I got my neighbors telling me I'm farming 1,600 acres and one is farming 5,000 acres. They're actually in more trouble than I am. I am now at 400 acres. I was 500 2 years ago. My goal is 100 acres to make a living. In other words, I'm going organic, cost return on investment. In other words, low input to the point where I'm not going to have any inputs other than the land itself. Going to an organic basis, which will give me almost double returns on my investment on a price control, which then I got a price on my product.
And I think, you know, these government subsidies, that's the only thing that's keeping them going. But now here's an example. So if we could get a 25% increase in wheat, say we're hoping $3 to $4 a bushel. I mean, mm-hmm. You could get rid of these government programs and economically make it sound. But if you
they're
do
going
that,
away.
Then the baker and the processor, if he would raise the price of bread and nickel, he could compensate for that 25%. But no, he says, you raise a bushel of wheat 25%, I'm going to raise it over bread 25%. He says, that's not me.
And
And that's the whole thing you've got to get in.
That's some of the unfair.
Is the pricing.
That's some of the unfair practices that are being done. And that's not really, I can't personally deal with a lot of them issues. I have to deal with my own land. I am in control of that as long as God allows me to be in control of that. And that's questionable at times. You know, in fact, that's one of the reasons I came here, to kind of identify what is God's role in this whole mechanism and where do I stand with Him? He is a creator. I'm a steward. How am I to, as a steward, work with this land that benefits Him and what He desires?
And when I grew up, now the area I grew up, within a 5 mile radius of my farm, there's 25 farms going on. They were there and I grew up, and then our country would be a lot better off if we had those 25 farms sitting there. Each person farm with 3/4 or 6 in land.
And I've been
if you get a prize to survive.
I've been fighting since I was working my advocacy role, which is about 2 years.
They'd be selling, well, say the smaller tractors, they'd be selling 25 smaller tractors instead of one big one. For one guy to run. That's what.
That's my feeling, and still, where's that farmer, where's he going, right? To what extent? Any other people have any views here?
Just your conversation back here. I just finished Great the Wrath today.
Oh, interesting.
And I just see a fantastic parallel with what you're seeing here. Agribusiness, food processors, scooping the little guy out. Same thing that happened in the Oklahoma store.
Yep.
The Great the Wrath.
Very similar. Texas is really being beat down. Iowa is now really probably worse shape than Minnesota. South Dakota, they've been beat down all their life. I think generally speaking.
Well, he's talking about the grasshoppers. Grasshoppers would come, they would block out the sun. They come in too thick and they land on the fence post and the wire. You couldn't even identify the fence. And they ate anything. I don't care what it was, the poor weeds, they ate everything. There was nothing left.
Well, being we got that subject going, let's get this thing, you know, settled. I personally have a belief that these grasshoppers are going to, more or less 1 year, they're going to stop. And I think that's what happened in the 30s. I've got all my neighbors right now spraying the whole county. Literally. And they're using Malthion, and I'm sitting there, I couldn't deal with that issue. I used one bacterial type material on my land, which is about a 2 year benefit, but it isn't anything to do with this Malthion, which is just going to upset the total ecological balance of the earth. I suspect I'll get back with a letter in the mail stating I'm required, and they will spray my land, and they will charge it to my taxes, because that is legally their right. And I'm sitting here as Joe Farmer saying, hey, what's going on here? I'm frustrated. That is what I'm doing, but I believe, and I still am reaffirmed, and all the, I've been sitting in a tape library, you know, for 3-4 days now, just digesting every kind of ecological understanding of our nature and our God's relationship, creation, the whole mechanism, trying to understand, am I right? Is this God's way or not? And I'm really affirmed that I am in the right.
They had no sprays at that time. The first year they wiped the second.
Well, they had arsenic.
They took sawdust and mixed it with molasses and arsenic to raid the ditch line.
And we're still being haunted 20 years after that of that arsenic. Right. And it's really still affecting us in our water table system.
And some of it was stored in old grain bins and old cattle that took it 30, 40 years later, beaten it and died.
Still happening. And
we're as a citizen of that area, if they spray the whole county with insecticide, I don't even want to be near there for, I don't know. They say 3 days, no human should be near it. And how do you, what are they going to, you know, they're just spraying indiscriminately. We talked to a legislator that came out to our area to explain that they're doing this, and he admitted they had absolutely no idea if it was going to work, how it was going to work, but they didn't know what else to do, and they had to react, so they're going. They're being reactionary rather than, you know, I kind of liken it to the nuclear plant buildups without knowing where to put your waste. Let's not spray everything like that till we know what the effects are going to be.
How do they do it? Is it by plane or by?
Generally plane. But there is still farmers already sick from the spraying.
See a real link with what the farm workers are fighting for in the Southwest. You know,
very similar.
Yeah, I've always sort of seen connections between the small farmer and the farm workers and what they're struggling for or with.
Mm-hmm. You wonder if it isn't our government policy to speed up the small farmers.
I hope that's not the case.
I'm hoping not, but when I look at it down the road, it's true.
there's a lot of people and advocates that are working in that direction, trying to, you know, condemn government policy, condemn government direction. I have really not a position. I've been in politics very, you know, significantly to the state levels and all of this type of thing, and I feel that most of the people just don't know what direction to go, especially on the legislative basis. I think we have to have a lot of people start to get to start talking to these people and suggesting some alternatives to look at their various policies that they're looking. Women's rights, we're looking at a holistic view there. We're looking at the agricultural mechanism. You know, how many people really have really talked to their senators as to what kind of an agricultural policy we want? They're just following whatever anybody and everybody is telling them. More than likely, the lobbyists from the various chemical people, the various soy, the grain people, all these other mechanisms. That's where the information has come from, not from the grassroots people.
And
that's where the sustainable ag network mechanism of dialogue is starting to develop toward.
You got your major farm organizations. I mean, they can agree.
They can.
They can.
Like the chemical companies aren't going to tell you, for sure they're not going to tell you what, how to cut down on chemical.
Well, they set up an agency that they're going to do this now. I'm really surprised that they
but
do that.
The source of where that information should be coming from and working on this particular issues are universities. But I tend to think our land-grant universities have their hands in the back pocket of the chemical companies.
They used to.
And that taints their research.
They used to, but they're trying to survive too. I personally believe that the land-grant institutions have made some serious mistakes, and I think they're really crying right now. I think the extension got really whacked hard these last couple of years on money because they were not being responsive to the so-called citizens they were trying to support. So I think they're looking at this body. That's where this here MISA is coming in, this Minnesota Institute of Sustainable Ag. They are sitting down with the university officials, starting the dialogue, suggesting, okay, what is some of the policy? What kind of coursework that could be connected here? What types of information does the university can give to the sustainable or even organic growers and what or have you? And this is it's a slow mechanism. I don't sense that we're probably going to see results in 5 years, but it's a beginning. And it's going to make people start hoping and giving some strength. And I would say that is the solution. It's the attitude of the farmers, and that's hope.
I'm just interested in like how you, like in the past few years now, what type of chemicals have you used? How is your financial situation different now? Like, have you used before, you said you used all the fertilizers that was recommended, you used all the pesticides, and now how have you cut down, and have you noticed an increased weed problem, or?
Well, soil testing, I've evaluated where my soil levels should be, and so by only putting what I need, or not knowing what I really need, I don't put it. That's probably my philosophy. If I don't really know some of the solutions, why am I putting them down? In other words, that's where I'm seeing I have a high calcium, which is off the chart. Maybe that's affecting my soil. Maybe that's what's causing me to have such low yield. Maybe there must be some kind of an acid base that maybe could work against this calcium or other mechanisms so I can have a better growing potential within the soils. And then, of course, we're dealing with other issues.
Well, see, just like for weeds right now, and you felt that, like, was sustainable what you're doing right now. Are you controlling your, are people controlling your weed problem sustainable?
I sense it's a very appropriate. Most of them are doing a very good job, almost to extreme, because I'm even finding that even some of these weeds are companion crops to potential growth. I know there's a popcorn grower out there that believes he has to have a little bit of pigeon grass in order to get maximum growth and potential out of his things. Now there's probably some weed plant relationships here that should be looked at that we're not identifying.
So what are you doing right now?
I'm a rich tiller. I believe in the soil being lost is a problem to me as an individual. So what I am doing, I have a buffalo system. I go out there and I just go out there and plant. If there's any fertilizer, which generally seems to be a lot of water lately, because that's what I'm using as a fertilizer, is a lot of water with a little bit of 28-old sometimes, and I probably put maybe kind of a balanced starter because of our cold temperatures up there. I need at least 2-3 gallons, which is about all I'm putting down. in the first cultivation, I put a little more nitrogen. That's about all I really need. Then the natural temperature factors work within the soil structure, working my organic levels, base soils, into where it's going to do some good with the plant. In other words, temperature maybe is my main problem. If I could find a source of temperature building within my crop structure, maybe that is a solution. That is where we need dialogue, we need communication with other people, what they're doing, why they're doing it. So maybe there's another solution for somebody.
So have you noticed the weed problem in your fields?
I have a little weed problem, yes.
I think we don't have the manicured crops. I mean, I remember coming out to that area the first time in the east and seeing some of these fields, they don't have a weed in their entire field. I mean, and there used to be the stigma of no weeds. Some weeds don't hurt anything.
Well, I'm interested in going, what's the balance there? What's, you know, where can you be, where is the economical point for you, what you can get by with, and what?
Technically, if you want to start using computer programs, they come down right down on the bottom line, and they're available. I had a computer, I guess, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and that's where I started understanding some of the comparisons of economic value. In fact, that's why I bought the computer, because somebody was saying, how much does it really cost to grow a particular bushel of corn? Hey, I could sit down with my pencil and go through all these figures, but then I was starting to look at, well, how much is my living costs? What are they really costing me to live in a home? Then we start looking at other mechanisms interrelating to that. What does it cost to pull that tractor out in that field with that particular implement? What does it cost to drag? What does it cost to spray? All these mechanisms got to be put together to come down with a definite cost tag.
I think he's asking, how are you doing with all this in some way? And I think we would say we're not making as many dollars, you know, maybe, but the input is so much less that, you know, there's a balance.
Some herbicides now.
Yes.
You are using
spot banding type mechanisms. I'm spot spraying my sunflower, which geez, that really makes a deal of fuel out there, but really the neighbors don't like that idea too. So I have to go out there and do some. I could go physically and start chopping them. I have had sunstroke, but I have to be careful with that mechanism. That is not an excuse, but that is a way of doing it and controlling it. The best way really is tillage. Heavy tillage on your soil. Ridge is not really a companion mechanism for heavy tillage on some of your soil, but it is a real cost-effective one at this point. Now, this has actually been a fantastic experience for me, this demonstration. I was out there with my chisel plow last fall, twice I chisel plowed. I was disking it. I have never seen so much dust in my life. I was gagging and dying and everything else in my tractor with the heat and all those other aspects, which I'm not used to. I just go out there and plant, I cultivate twice, I harvest. That's just about all I really do. And that was a new experience. Then I start seeing some rocks that I haven't seen before. Ridge till, you don't have a lot of rocks. They're there, but they just seem to not grow like you do on heavy tillage ground. That's a new experience for me to learn, and that's something, again, I had forgot when I wasn't in the conventional tillage practice. And I've done a lot of experience in no-till. Now that's absolutely petrochemical intensified mechanism. But I'm finding it don't work with beans. You don't no-till beans in. That's an absolute truth because you're looking at $40 an acre on chemical costs. I don't like that idea. I don't think that's the way to go. But there is some other crops that maybe would work, and that's what I'm finding from North Dakota. They're no-tilling their rye. They're no-tilling their winter wheats. They don't have a significant herbicide problem. You don't have to spray it. I don't have to spray it. But I do think I have to possibly put a little fertilizer. I'm not looking at putting out like 28-0 or the conventional petrochemicals. I'm looking at some other alternatives. Maybe even simple water. There just might be some solutions there. I found this out a few years back when I had sweet corn. I just put water under there and I put 28-0 and I saw really no difference in my yield. So maybe there's just some timing mechanisms here. Maybe there's types of fertilizers out here that are available that we should look at and possibly research. Maybe the university needs to know about some of this information. Maybe we have to start putting some trees and start looking at some of the South American mechanisms of that so-called fertilizer within some of these tree leaves that would blow into your soils, and you probably won't need excessive any kind of fertilizer of any kind. This is a possibility, and these are things that we have to know and understand. There is a group in Lamberton, Minnesota right now, through that their Lamberton experiment station, they bought 120 acres of organic ground. So they're doing some experimentation. We as organic people, I'm not saying we, organic people believe that we wish we could look at some regular conventional ground and see how we can make that a transition zone to organic. That is another way of thinking process, and which is good. It's dialogue, it's communication, it's working with the people, with these old established ways to see if there's another way of looking at this land to make the farmers stay on the soil. Organic people are an interesting group of people. I love them. I think they're just unique. They're very hardened in many ways because they've had to fight every battle on earth, neighbors included, the whole community, government, the whole mechanism. They're a very strong type of people. They're good people. They are also big farmers. We're looking at Fred Kirschman in North Dakota looking at 3,000 acres of organic ground. I've got a neighbor on the Elbow Lake, which is about 40, 50 miles from us, Ellers, which is farming somewhere around 2,500 acres of organic ground. So it doesn't necessarily mean to be small, it's going to be only organic. It could be big too. If you know what you're doing, how you're doing, you know your soils, and you care for your soils, and you can identify the individual difficulties of that soil. That's what I think is the goal of all agriculture people, which are, have that skill. And that's another aspect that I'm concerned about right at this moment, is that we are seeing, I'm starting to become probably the youngest person in our county. I'm 46 years old. Who's going to replace me? Our agricultural extension agent made a statement. We, of the half of the acreage that will be replaced 10 years from now, there's probably only a third of the young farmers, maybe, that could be able to purchase that land 10 years from now. We've got some new problems that are developing. And that's something we have to start looking and addressing. This is a concern, and I really appreciate young people starting to look at agriculture in a different way, understanding and working with people that have possibly an organic parcel. And these are a whole through the OGA, Organic Growers Association of Minnesota. They have some connections where the young people can literally live on the farm for a summer or so to understand what that farming practice is. The youth are really kind of leaving the land at this point because of the so-called economic crisis that we so-called had. I think it's really been a serious one because I think we've lost the population. My children are probably not going to be coming back to my life. I really feel that. They're gone. There is some loss here. The skills of understanding and feeling the land. And that is where the farmer, you cannot be replaced that unless you work with it. And maybe the youth can help.
As I understand what you're saying, I'm not a farmer, so I don't have to learn your language. But as I understand what you're saying, the move towards organic farming is motivated by the issue or the concern about cost or price, both dollars and land. That is, if you
that's one issue.
Oh, that's one issue. If you could get away from pesticides and all chemicals, your cost would be reduced, of course.
Significantly to a point. You know, to a point. It's not going to be completely eliminated. I got to keep repairing that tractor.
Yes. Oh, sure, sure. But nonetheless, that would be a significant savings on the part of the farmer, which would then sustain the farmer and enable him to keep continuing mm-hmm. doing the work. The other price that is being paid has to do with the land, the ecological concern. Well, what price are we paying right now? That is, do you see evidence of of land being destroyed or damaged, by what price do you see us paying down the road on it? If we don't, the price being paid because of chemicals.
It's the water tables. 20 years from now, that's how long it takes to get to that water table. And once it's boiled, there is no solution to my knowledge and information. And I've been working pretty heavily on this particular subject through the University of Minnesota Morris in the Water Resources Committee group. And also, there are some other dialogues that are being spoken out. And that is probably a major concern. I personally don't feel I can drink the water out of my faucet. Everybody's thinking the solutions will be that we can get community waters to the rural areas. I think that's probably just as detrimental as the other. There's some poisons being put back in here, not to mention the communication of the water from one source to another. There's things being picked up within the pipes, other types of things going on, not to mention that the water is even pure when it's even put into that water source. And that's a real concern.
Are the chemical companies at all aware of or sensitive to that concern about water?
Yeah. I think they very are. That's why this Acres group, more or less, has organized. I'm getting literature from this group, concern for cutting back on chemical uses. I have some problems with that. I don't think they're going to be cutting their profit levels at all. They'll probably be raising the prices if anything to compensate for this investment. But there is a lot of public pressure. I guess that's another little part of this whole thing, how it affects society. And that's where we're coming into. Hey, we're being affected from your foodstuffs. You're eating wheat that might be contaminated with this malathion. You're going to be eating corns. You might be eating vegetables from the various sources, which you've probably been eating all along if it happened to come from Mexico and all the other agencies and areas that have been allowed to use the chemicals that we were not allowed in America. Go ahead. At this point, yes.
So, and do they then, the people that buy their product, pay more for their product?
That's right.
And it's a very specialized one.
Right. $6 for wheat. Beans are around $12 per bushel. Corn is around $4. Rye, I think they're around $4. Oats has there's a tremendous demand of oats this year for that. But yeah, there's a different market structure, and they literally sit down one day in a group of people and say, hey, this is the market we want for our this is the market we want for our crop this year. And this is before they even have put it in the ground. This was in the spring. They are doing that, and I'm really impressed by that concept. In fact, I was hey, I better start looking seriously about this market potential. I think personally this is the right, and I think this is the right of each one of all of us to demand quality food. I mean, I don't know, our survival of our species will not exist if we keep deteriorating our land, our water systems, our food tables. I mean, we're not going to survive, to put it bluntly.
An example is the pesticide, the herbicide on apples, Eller, in Minnesota last winter. Washington has
each product that's brought to the store now by the so-called labeling mechanism that's being with the this here NAFCA. This organization has set up a common process throughout the whole United States, which each farmer has got a number, and all his products will go, and it can be identified right down to the store. This can be in Europe, it can be any place in the world, literally. And that is coming, it's here. Minnesota has it, California has it. These are cooperating, these are mechanisms coming. So you can identify the source of organic food.
With meat too, right there?
Yes.
Through the packing process?
No question about it, it's all interconnected. If you have an organic label, you can, this will be identified right through the whole process.
This is just true of the organic?
Yes, only organic.
Is there a spot check that goes on to make sure that this farmer isn't?
They're pretty tough. Let's put it this way, the organic organizations, if they buy the product. And it's an honor system to a point. But you as a farmer, I mean, I was called here by Cincinnati here to sell beans, and I got 1,000 bushels of beans at $12 a bushel. I was sitting there with my mouth moving. I had to say no. I do not have organic beans. They also called me for oats, and there was about $6 a bushel at that particular time. And here I was sitting there with about 300, 400 bushels. You know, and I would never get that. I think they ended up with probably $2 at the most for my particular oats. I mean, these are things that, you know, it's within the self, and it's the attitude of the individuals of which we are growing.
Sounds like you better go organic.
Tremendous demand. In fact, there's been a statement that we could over-organic. No, I don't think we could ever organic anything. In fact, if anything, if we had everything organic, maybe then we could have more farmers out there willing to make some sacrifices, willing to put some effort into their soils, identify that particular land stewardship requirement that we as citizens demand, in my judgment, and I think we have to. And that's what I guess my last thing, what you can encourage to do, is demand quality on the organic basis. Don't accept some of this food that we're being shoved onto. 80% of the food in Minnesota is coming from out of state. Maybe we should look at this differently. Well, if we can start putting farmers back on the land, I would feel very much elated that this is a positive direction. We still have a policy of cheap food, which is not going to allow this to happen. You know, but yes, I really want that. That is my goal. Hopefully we can look at more Minnesota-grown products within the regional areas. Yes, and we have organic, I don't know if that's a, we have bigger gardeners out there. Of course, we have a lot less people because of the crisis, the farms, every seven farms. We have a so-called businessman going under, leaving communities. We have this year transition going on. I suspect with this grasshopper plague that we're going to be dealing with is going to have a tremendous effect that way, too. It's an economic crisis. It isn't necessarily a grasshopper crisis out there. Because all these people have finally got through the mediation process, which I don't know if you know anything about. It's a mechanism which the farmer can sit down and work with the lender, coming up with a legitimate financial solution to keep him on that particular farm for a period of time. But it's locked into more or less law. And if he cannot make his payments, he's done. He's totally bankrupt. And we've all been pretty much through that process in our area. This is going to really put a real economic struggle on each individual. Now what am I going to do? Another individual problem that I understand also from California, from my advocacy work, there was some concerns there at that point, that was 2 years ago, that 95% of all the land that was farmed was corporation owned. 5% was left, and the 5% was having real struggles even to keep it. So who really is using your water? The corporation systems, or is it the individual farm land owner?
Well, I understand a lot of that. I've seen the Bureau of Reclamation built for the project. It was originally 1/4 of a family built. And then, what I understand, legally, these corporations are in fact control of that land.
They're doing
it. It wasn't meant to be.
We're not allowed to have a corporation. But I know there's a lot of corporate land that
has it happened.
Because we, well, just our neighboring areas, which is about 40 miles away, I think we got 150 turkey setups, which I don't know how many 100,000 turkeys in each individual unit. And, you know, the whole ramification of that. And that's supposed to help us as farmers. I have some questions about that.
project that we can cost.
And see, this is a, this is an excellent potential to start looking back at again. Maybe we should start reinstating some of these older programs that work to help the people to build communities and start working with the communications again and working back and forth again. Maybe we have to start looking at that. And I think this is where this sustainable ag mechanism is developing a dialogue mechanism again and giving hope to the people out there. I mean, we've got literally, because of the grasshopper thing, I mean, we got farmers literally at each other's throats, neighbors, because why didn't you spray your CRP? I mean, I cannot control my grasshopper because you didn't do that. And then they start looking at the banker and says, well, you've got to pay that. Well, who's going to pay the bill? I mean, that's another bottom line, this whole land. And then these guys are struggling in the first place, and it's just farmer against farmer, and I have some real struggles with that one, because it's not fair.
What's the discussion about, obviously, with more people, what we're going to have, we're going to need more food supply, and the lower down on the food chain you eat, the more supply you got. So what's the discussion then on, you know, raising hogs and beef cattle and chickens and turkeys and the like versus raising grains for people?
The government mechanism indicating that basically, we're going to larger farm operations. That's the goal. I have some problems with that. I don't agree with that concept.
Keep feeding beef cattle? Or?
Yep. Hormone. We're looking at genetic engineering. The Cargills are taking over the whole mechanism and controlling the total supply of food stuff to you, which you're going to really be paying the price at the end if this is really what's going to be happening. That's where the grassroots efforts of the individuals in your little garden can start growing into another process of understanding the total impact of food from the soil to your mouth and your whole workings mechanism.
Were you saying quit eating meat? Or cut back on meat?
Yeah, when there's, you know, 500 million Americans instead of 250, we're either going to have to grow twice as much as everything that we're doing now, or we're going to have to change where we eat on the food chain and not eat beef and pork, but eat the grain that we're feeding the beef and pork, because they use up so much of the grain.
Little sidelight that I've been trying to understand. To be honest with you, I think we don't, as farmers, have overproduced, and the world don't need our products anymore. There's probably one country that might, in South Africa or in Africa, that has a need, and that's because it's in civil war of some sorts. In other words, I sense that we probably should develop quality food rather than quantity. We can grow quantity. I mean, it's simple. I mean, we can get out with the four-wheel drive. My brother, 3 years ago, was planting 50,000 acres of wheat, literally, in one, just two people. They had everything done in one single shot process. I mean, it could be done, and they got fantastic results. $8 an acre. You can produce it, but what do you got when you're done? Is it quality? I don't know. It's wheat. I don't think it can do it much more than 1 year. In my experimentation with the no-till process, 1 year with the rise in the winter wheats is probably all you can do, especially on an organic basis. But the weeds start taking over in that, and you're going to start herbiciding excessively and other types of things happening. In other words, the quack grasses will start growing heavily, and that's one of the factors I have with my ridge till. To be honest with you, another factor that's happening to me as a farmer is that the herbicides don't work. Simple as that. So I have to and am required to double my amounts because I have high organic ground. Interesting process, and I've been doing a lot of research in that. There was a lot of herbicides that just would not work when you finally get down and talk to them personally. Why isn't my going to work? Why isn't that herbicide working? Why doesn't Roundup work? Year after year, I have to continue to spray that. Finally, this year, I'm using RO water. The quality of water is the factor that makes these herbicides work or not. Before, I was probably triple spraying. It's recommended in the books that you have to double spray, especially anything over a four organic basis. In other words, some water quality was even affecting the herbicides to even make it work. So now, I have a one-shot spray instead of two, three, or a combination of other types of herbicides. Things that we have to start looking at in a different picture. Water table, that's a real critical factor. Where I learned a lot of this came from is Arizona, because the waters wouldn't work there with the herbicides or the fertilizers. They had to go to an RO water system, and that's what I'm doing now on my farm in Minnesota. Reverse osmosis, it's a purification filtered, high pressure filtered system. And I think a lot of Californians now are required to do that for their water. In other words,
they're... Get rid of your salts.
Pardon me?
They get rid of your salts or what?
Salts, just about, yeah. Most
everything. It tastes real. Nothing.
It's like an acid. Nothing. It actually turns acid. It's 6-0.
It's better than all the junk that was in it.
I feel a lot more comfortable now about the water I have.
We're drinking it, but he got it specifically for the crops. But now we're using it to drink.
Any questions? What do you think you want to do?
Thank you. Well, how much does it cost to set up that reverse osmosis?
I'm going to the neighborhood Culligan process. I think basically you can purchase the unit around $800 for permanency, and then there's about a maintenance fee of somewhere around 60, 70 bucks a year type of thing to replace filters. And then it all depends on if you have soft water with that, and if you have your chemical basis of your water itself, if it's high iron, high something else or something else, each individual water supply should be identified. And that's coming down the road here, too. I mean, we're looking at evaluation of our water systems throughout the state of Minnesota now. And that's coming through the water bill.
What are we paying? $40 a month to rent?
That is, I'm going to a 50-gallon unit. And that's why it's costing, the actual unit will be about $1,600. But we're paying about $140, yes, for 50-gallon unit per day.
This is just water to mix chemicals.
Yep.
No, we're using it for drinking water.
For drinking,
well,
it'll
yeah,
be an
it's not irrigation water or anything like that. It's just for mixing purposes.
Yeah. Fertilizer. I'm using a lot for fertilizer.
Yeah. You have your own well.
Yep.
You have Minnesota well water system.
They're working on, people are real happy about it. I have some real problems with that. You're talking chlorine in the water. You're talking fluoride in the water. This is all going to start being affecting the other systems that we're not doing. I understand that, and I understand why you're probably doing it, but I still have some concerns about that, because I think there's got to be another way unless we get some controls. You're losing control of your particular water supply.
Have you noticed other people in your area looking at sustainable agriculture?
Yep. We've got our county, to be honest with you, I think had a pretty decent representation. I think we had about 12, 15 people. Some of the people came out of Woodward, I think. Realized even the thinking in this direction. They don't want to spray. To put it bluntly, most of the farmers I've been talking to, they don't like the spray. This is the whole point. And it wasn't working when they did spray, and so they get kind of sick with that.
The health cost too, 2,4-D has been linked to
society effects.
A lot of them are urinary spraying. Insects is the better the spray is, the quicker the insects become intolerant and reproduce in this species and totally resistant.
And that's why another reason I'm not going to be, if I have a choice, it might be done for me, but if I have a choice, I still am not going to spray. Because what we're doing, these guys are spraying one shot, you know, and every 3 weeks they have a new group of grasshoppers growing. They kill that one batch, they got to kill another batch, they're going to kill another batch, which served already at four times at this point. When I left, they were starting to talk about the fourth spray. And I'm not saying what's going to happen here down the road here 20 years from now. We're going to, our water table is just going to be contaminated. And that is very sandy ground. It goes straight now. To the point that same area is high irrigation. So one individual had a 25% nitrogen level within his water table alone. I mean, we know there's going to be some water table effects because of what's happening. I personally don't think the solution is spraying. I don't care if it was, I maybe can save a crop this year, but what about next year? I mean, a grasshopper is going to be back to next year just as bad, no matter what. And unless the environment changes, unless we start getting heavy rains in the fall, rains in the spring, the grasshopper is going to be there no matter whether you spray or not. And that's my feeling, and they're just going to quit when all the predators are coming back in force, and they'll be killing the grasshoppers. And that's what you're spraying also, is the predators as well as the grasshoppers.